I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. A very special program awaits you. This is a press conference nearly 30 years old where individuals from around the United States with their board-certified physicians, all their medical records, came to New York, and years before they had full-blown AIDS, but using different modalities from different physicians, not mine, they were able to reverse their AIDS-defining conditions and are healthy. And we believe that the American media would share this story and that AIDS groups and foundations and governmental agencies would be very interested in this information because the only alternative was the very toxic and deadly AZT and DDI and DDC, protease inhibitors. Boy, were we surprised. Not a single member of the media showed up. Wow. You're here. So let's go directly to the press conference.
Gary?
I'd like to welcome you today. This hopefully will be a turning point because possibly for the first time, we're going to tell you the good news about AIDS. Up to this point, we have been led to believe that it is a pandemic out of control, that virtually everyone in the world is susceptible. It has reached paranoid levels in the United States. We're going to focus on three different aspects of the story. These three areas have rarely, if ever, been given any time or attention in the general media. And you'll have the opportunity to ask any questions that you wish as we go on. We will have this panel of experts and the ultimate experts, the individuals who have had their lives turned around by having what was diagnosed as a end-stage disease. It didn't make sense that when we were told it was an infectious disease, that not everyone who was coming into contact with persons who had what we were told was the infection were themselves infected. It didn't make sense that a virus that traditionally has been known to be a rather latent virus and not a terribly pathogenic virus would devastate individuals and cause up to 26 different syndromes, since AIDS is not a single disease, but a series of syndromes. It also surprised me when the majority of people questioned recently felt that AIDS was now the number one killer and surpassing heart disease and cancer in the United States. I was also surprised when they said that a virus could be latent for up to 15 or 20 years, therefore having no way of gauging when someone would go from HIV infected to full-blown AIDS. The media has consistently parroted the voice of the industry that is behind the treatment of AIDS, saying HIV equals AIDS equals death. As a result, some people who have just merely tested positive for the antibodies have felt their life devastated. Some have committed suicide. And many of these individuals have been socially ostracized with a great deal of prejudice. So we're looking at a condition that has simply been, we feel, misrepresented. We want to give you the other side of the story on AIDS today. I would like to begin with Dr. Christopher Calliope. Dr. Calliope has treated many persons with the HIV virus and is here to share some of his insights. Dr. Calliope?
I think the most important part of the picture initially to get out to the public is that we're not looking at one organism and trying to shoot that one organism down with some type of medication. As we have mentioned, this is a constellation of syndromes or problems that occur. A person can come in with 10 or 15 other compounding problems, certainly nutritional deficiency, and I've seen that frequently in a majority of patients. Now, nutritional deficiency is not something that's only found in this population of individuals. It could be found elsewhere. But if a person is deficient in protein, then their immune system will decrease in function. If they're deficient in B6, vitamin C, glutathione, zinc, their T cells will decrease in function. T cells are dependent upon certain nutrients to work properly. So if we're just looking at dealing with a bug and we don't take care of the nutritional deficiency, then we're missing a large part of the picture. There are other organisms that will contribute to the progression of what we call full-blown AIDS. Research has shown that cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus, herpes virus, mycoplasma, TB, etc., can make a person that is HIV positive and otherwise healthy progress to full-blown AIDS somewhere between 3 and 5 times as fast. We have to aggressively look for these organisms in individuals and deal with them in a safe and a natural fashion. Research has shown as well that vitamin C can inhibit replication of viruses. Glutathione, which is a simple protein, can inhibit replication of viruses. Certain herbs have the ability to do the same thing. So whereas one group of individuals may come in on numerous medications and may have a repetitive damage to their tissue, to their bone marrow, to their immune cells, and that's not being corrected, we may be able to see that if they cut down or cut back on those medications and stimulate their immune system in a natural fashion, that their weight will start to increase, they'll gain weight, that their immune parameters will start to increase. There's a lot of research lately about nutrition and HIV, and probably the key terms relative to progression of illness as well as progression of heart disease and cancer revolve around substances called antioxidants. There is a situation that occurs, and it happens in all of our bodies, wherein free radicals, damaging substances, will oxidize certain tissues of the body and create a situation wherein we don't have the ability to stop mutation of DNA and cells, and that will contribute to cancer formation. A lot of individuals that are HIV positive and develop full-blown AIDS will end up with certain types of cancers. And this holds true for the people that have heart disease and cancer in the population. So we need to stop free radical damage of our tissues, and that's done very safely and easily by antioxidant vitamins, vitamins A, C, E, beta-carotene, selenium. Some of this information was in the New York Times. Other information comes from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So the research is out there. I've recently taken probably 7 to 12,000 abstracts off of the computer relative to nutritional deficiency and disease, as well as viral syndromes, you know, cancer, and heart disease. So we can't, again, look at just trying to deal with one organism. We have to take a very comprehensive approach. When we do that, we see improvement, a significant improvement. Some people require what we call TPN, total parenteral nutrition. If they can't eat or they can't digest or break down or absorb food, then we may have to go an alternate route and put an IV line into the person and feed them intravenously. And then you'll see the patient gain the weight, the immune parameters start to come up. So there's a great deal more that we could be doing for these patients rather than what is commonly called, you know, polypharmacy. I'm not against using medications that are appropriate, that are safe, that are non-damaging, but we have to be very, very careful when we utilize such.
If a scientist can find that a single cytotoxic agent, whether it's DDI, DDC, or AZT, is able to suppress the replication of the HIV virus in vitro in a test tube, and that makes front page headlines around the world. That scientist who discovers this ends up as ABC's Personality of the Week. And then 6 months later, it's found, as actually occurred, that this combination cocktail does not work. I then have to question, why is it that when we have live human bodies, not a petri dish, who had full-blown AIDS, who were at death's door and medically documented, today are alive and well and completely normal, and no one covers the story? I'm having a problem understanding that. I don't understand what it is. Now, I'm also in the media, and I would think that would be a very exciting story. Especially if you have good quality medical documentation, you have physicians and scientists and patients, because clearly that's more important than something in a test tube. And that's part of our story today also, is will this actually get some coverage fairly and objectively, as fairly and as objectively as what seems to be anything that any pharmaceutical company says immediately gets headlines. So we're asking that question also today. Dr. Martin Feldman. Dr. Feldman is a highly respected neurologist with a background in preventative medicine. He's published over 80 papers in peer-reviewed scientific journals, and therefore, as both an academician and a clinician, he has the capability of understanding both the science and the clinical experience with a patient. And his background specifically is how do you take a person who is immune deficient and build that immunity up to keep them from going further into a disease state.
And fortunately, we have a movement, although it's just beginning and it's a small movement, of what we call complementary medicine. And I'd like to explain some of what that's about because it's at the root of all the philosophical difficulties. The complementary physician has available all of the scientific technology of the medical community, the orthodox medical community, and we complementary physicians use all that scientific ability. And we're not against the use of pharmaceuticals when they are appropriate. However, the complementary physician has another armamentarium, which is natural therapy. By and large, the orthodoxy does not have any great interest in natural therapy. They have interest in pharmaceutical therapy primarily because that's what we learn in medical school. That's what the drug companies teach us. That's convenient. The patient wants a prescription, et cetera, and so forth. So at the root of it, first of all, is a philosophical issue of natural versus pharmaceutical. Number two, we have a different philosophy of how to treat illness. We are not so concerned with the agent, the pathogen, which is what the orthodoxy is only interested in by and large. We are much more interested in the host. We do not get so focused on only, oh, it's this pathogen, get that bad pathogen. That's not the issue. The issue is build up the host. So that's number two. Next is we consider augmenting the body's innate abilities. We have the philosophy, build up what we have inside us, as opposed to worrying about the externals so much. So therefore, one has there a concept of, well, how do we build? Well, an immune system is a key issue philosophically because we have enormous data on how to build an immune system. And this is the whole ball game. We want to strengthen the immune system. We don't want to beat down a virus that may not even be the real issue, because it's not just the virus. It's a parasite. It's a yeast overgrowth. It's all kinds of mixed viruses. It is not just a simplistic idea of get the pathogen. I'll give you some of the specifics of how the complementary approach would work. First of all, we also consider lifestyle in a complementary mode, and we also consider food in great detail. So number one, we would reduce, we'll call them harmful foods. Sugar is a terrible immune suppressive food. It has to go. We would, on the other hand, add live foods such as sprouts, fresh juices, great immune enhancing foods. Garlic is a great food for immune enhancement. Lifestyle has to be addressed, has to be optimized. And then we have very, very simple food concentrates, which are what we call vitamins. They're taken out of food and they're put into a tablet, but it's coming from a food. It's a concentrate from a food. And the very basic immune nutrients, very, very simple, no question about the physiology of it. Vitamin A, vitamin B6, vitamin B12, vitamin C, bioflavonoid complex, part of the vitamin C group, vitamin E. Every person who has immune weakness of any kind, not just HIV persons, all immune issues have to have these vitamins in balance, and minerals, especially zinc and selenium. The complementary community also has available, with great skill, herbal therapy, very, very helpful for immune support. Homeopathic remedies, very, very pushed aside, important. Really medical history of homeopathic pharmaceuticals. They're sort of a cross between a natural substance and a pharmaceutical, great for immune support repair. Plus, we also have glandular extracts from the thymus or spleen of an animal that has enormous power in our own thymus and spleen. So the complementary physician is concerned about the host, not the pathogen. We will use natural therapy as opposed to only drug therapy. We will build up the host. We will use a whole complementary approach beyond just the stuck-in-the-mud-right-now limited view of the orthodox medical system.
You today will only see probably four people speaking who have had advanced AIDS. We have dozens upon dozens who could be saying the same story. Example, there is a heterosexual couple who years ago, over 12 years ago, were IV drug users, gave it up, have lived what they considered a relatively clean life, tested positive for the HIV virus, had low T-cell count. The husband has a T-cell count of 7. The wife was very low. They went on what we call an immune augmentation program, changing the lifestyle, eating a wholesome diet with none of the refined sugars, carbohydrates, animal proteins, coffee, getting rid of the junk. Exercising, stress management, guided visualization, spiritual affirmation. surrounding themselves with people who believed that they were going to live, and they did. Plus IV drips of vitamin C with glutathione and N-acetylcysteine and the B complex. Prior to their starting this therapy, when an immune evaluation was taken by a physician, complementary physician, they were shown to be deficient in every single one of the important nutrients that are there for the immune system. No one in their previous therapy of their traditional orthodox therapy checked them for any of these things. They just checked for the HIV virus. It was also found they had human herpes virus 1 and 2 and 6, Epstein-Barr at high titers, cytomegalovirus at high titers, mycoplasma, parasites. They had everything. Now, no one was testing for these things. This complementary physician did. By using the program that these two physicians have discussed, within a period of 13 months, they are P24 antigen negative, PCR negative, completely normal immune systems. Blood chemistry show they are deficient in nothing. And if you take any physician in the United States, have them take a comprehensive blood analysis and physical analysis, they'll say, what are you doing here? You're as healthy as can be. The man has 6 T cells. The wife has 1,100. We are looking at the wrong markers. This, again, is this idea of when is the media and the scientific community going to challenge the contradiction and the paradoxes that we have been faced with, that it's one cause. Well, what if it isn't? How about all the people with AIDS who don't have the HIV virus? And what if it's one treatment, AZT or DDI, and no other approach is considered? Up to this point, there has been no allowance anywhere for the other approach. So when someone suddenly suggests another approach exists, immediately they're attacked. We're suggesting it's time to stop the attacks. To share more on this, and one very, very controversial issue that never gets attention and must, absolutely must, it is what I call iatrogenic AIDS treatment, meaning drug-induced damage or disease, is John Lawrenson. John has done more research on the question of AZT than anyone I'm aware of in the United States. And he's taken great risks to do this, because if everyone believes that the treatment is AZT, and everyone is looking at just AZT, and someone says, but hold on a second, how many people are getting sicker by using it? How many people would not have gone from HIV positive and healthy to AIDS had they not taken it?
Yeah, I'm John Lawrenson. My main field is survey research, which I was in for 20 years, although at the moment I am now a full-time writer. The advantage of this background was that survey research is, in fact, what most so-called epidemiology consists of, and also, in a way, most clinical trials. Most of my colleagues in survey research regard people in the government or the public health service or academia who try to do survey research as bungling amateurs. So therefore, I have gone into a lot of what I regard as very bad research. This would include the phase 2 trials, which were the basis of approving AZT, in which cheating and irregularities of all sorts took place. In a nutshell, the trials were totally invalid. With regard to AZT, I'm of the opinion that there is no credible scientific proof that it has benefits of any kind, and there's a great deal of evidence that the drug is extremely toxic and indeed incompatible with life. I subscribe to what's called the risk AIDS hypothesis, which in a nutshell says that the people getting sick in ways that are called AIDS, and now there are 29 AIDS indicator diseases. Not a single one of them is new. People who become sick in one of these 29 different ways do so for risks in their own lives, which can be identified. So therefore, on the issue of recovery, and in my new book called The AIDS War, I go into a 24-page chapter on a program for recovery. Basically, it's common sense, simply analyzing a person's life, seeing what risks there are, and eliminating them. Probably most of these risks will consist of poisons of one sort or another. The toxins or the poisons would include recreational drugs of all kind. They would include also medical drugs, including antibiotics. But when we really get down to it, it's the secret of health and disease, the secret of happiness and unhappiness. All of these things are multifactorial. And the one thing I want to leave people with is that understanding why people are sick in ways that are called AIDS, and understanding recovery gets down to a concept of health. This is the one thing that the people in the AIDS industry are absolutely hostile to, the concept of health. What does this mean? It means fresh air and good water and good food. It means good human relationships. It means satisfying work. It means good food. It means exercise and rest. Now, what could be more commonsensical? And of course, it also means keeping poisons out of the body. Poisons would include everything from the nitrite inhalants, designer drugs, heroin, cocaine, cigarettes, and ACT. When we really get down to it, the whole AIDS mystery, the whole AIDS mystique gets down to the fact that people really are sick, and there are good reasons why they are sick. And once those reasons are understood, there is every reason to be optimistic that these people can recover.
When we contacted legislators at the federal level and state level, most believed that AIDS is a single virus, AZT is the treatment of choice. The idea that a person could go against this treatment and not only survive, but become completely normal and healthier than they'd ever been in their life seemed an impossibility. Senator Patterson was one of those individuals who did not feel that this was an impossibility. He first questioned, what proof did we have? I told him that we had thousands upon thousands of scientific studies from peer-reviewed journals showing that the average American is deficient in many different immune modulators, and that by using nutrition, lifestyle, behavior modification, you were able to build the person's immune system up and therefore eradicate many diseases. He came to our office and he spent two separate days all day reviewing these scientific studies. He then said, what proof do you have in patients? We gave him lists and lists and lists of patients who had gone from end-stage AIDS with medical confirmation that they would have otherwise died to completely normal, healthy people. We're not saying cure. We're saying normal and healthy. He took the time to do his homework. And when he was convinced that there was legitimacy, he decided to take this issue forward and suggest that maybe this is the type of study we should be doing and not one more of 100,000 studies on AZT or DDI or DDC.
There is an historical perspective that unfortunately is impinging upon the concept of what would be considered to be good research and would be beneficial for our communities. We see in this room a great amount of achievement that has been opposed in the society that we live in, a society that has now suffered 339,000 documented cases. When we think that this is actually going on in our society, and we think that government officials are participating in it, what is the definition of government? Its desire is to serve people. How can we sit back and not even set up some kind of a clinical test, some kind of a comparison? Let's go to the hospices and take 100 patients and treat 50 of them with the conventional therapies and try 50 of them on some of the protocols that we're suggesting. Let's look at some of the alternative therapies such as oxygen therapy and vitamin therapy and herbalism and some of what we're hearing today. Why are we afraid as a society when our people are dying not to examine new and alternative therapies? And so I would want to support any new information or any attempt that would bring about some kind of arrest to a disease certainly a syndrome that is killing people in this society. Thousands of years ago, somebody invented fire. And based on my experience working on this issue, I think it is likely that they were probably burned at the stake that they taught their brothers and sisters to light. And so I would just like to lend my voice to those who at this point want a public hearing on some of the alternative therapies and an opportunity to put those drugs that are being dispensed right now, such as AZT, which is really nothing more than an immunodepressant drug to treat an immune suppressant virus, on trial before those people in our society who are blanketly listening to medical personnel, because this is our socially ingrained policy to listen to them, and are in many respects exacerbating what is an illness that they already have. I think it's absolutely a shame. We have cases at bureaus of immunology and retrobiology where people who tested HIV positive now test negative. And when that happens, the response is, oh, well, they probably didn't have AIDS in the first place. That's a cute gimmick, but it's not right, and it's something that we are going to have to address. And I'm very happy that a lot of courageous and creative people have come here today to be a part of it.
When you hear the World Health Organization saying that we have a worldwide pandemic of AIDS and that we have a pandemic epidemic in the United States, what additional research do you do in fact-checking outside of the official sources, the CDC and Center for Allergy and Infectious Disease, or NCI? What do you do to verify that statement? Well, a group of French scientists decided to see, do we have as many people in Africa with AIDS as we're told, because we're frequently using the world AIDS statistics to boost our own war effort in America and more money. And what relationship does AIDS have in America to our total disease count? Because I study statistics, medical statistics, mortality statistics all the time. And I see we have 1 million people with coronary heart disease and dying, over 500,000 of heart attacks alone. We'll have 600,000 Americans dying of cancer this year, and we'll have 1,300,000 new cases. And I don't see anyone calling that either a pandemic or epidemic. And then I have to wonder, well, is AIDS a pandemic or epidemic? And is there some motivation beyond just wanting to help people? And I ask you, if we can see that a group of scientists who actually went to Africa and found that the people there who are being called AIDS were never given blood chemistries, they were diagnosed upon three symptoms: dry hacking cough for 30 days, loss of weight, and a chronic fatigue. Well, keep in mind that malaria, which does have pandemic status, is the number one killer in the world and has been for the past 20 years. There's no disease that's killed more than that. 5.5 million people have died in sub-Saharan Africa from malaria this year. TB, second, right behind malaria. Virtually indistinguishable symptoms from TB and malaria to AIDS. So all you have to have is the symptoms of TB or malaria, and you're immediately classified as AIDS. And then the money goes for the AIDS. No money is going for malaria or TB as compared to AIDS. And the money for AIDS is not going to change the nutritional status, the hygiene, the ability to help these people eat food. I think that's interesting. Now, if they did the blood workups and they actually went in and tested a village that was supposed to have 80% AIDS and found out that it was only 3%, and 100% HIV infection, found out that it was 15% HIV infection. And then you have the phenomenon of all these people with HIV who are completely well as long as they don't have malnutrition. So can we then call HIV the cause of AIDS? And can we say that there's a pandemic and an epidemic and keep all the other diseases out of perspective? These are questions that I'm merely asking the media to do a little additional research on. Now, the most important part of our day and story. Here are the people who count. They are the ultimate authorities. But each one of these people has meticulous, I mean meticulous, medical documentation. So if Anthony Fauci or Robert Gallo suggest that these people are successfully treated for a disease they never had, then I suggest that they take the time to look at their medical records, as we have and as scientists have, to bring you the absolute proof that there is a happy story and an ending to their tale of AIDS, and this should be across the board. We should have no more of the devastation with AIDS, and we don't need to have any more devastation of AIDS. AIDS can stop today from being a killer if we just took some advice and example from these people. I'd like to start with Chuck DeMarco. Chuck, would you please come up?
My story starts off in 1988. That was the year that I was diagnosed as having HIV infection. By 1989, I had gotten sick enough to the point where I was beginning to cough up blood. I was getting tired and tired till I collapsed at work. And in August of 1989, I was told that I had high titers for CMV, Epstein-Barr virus, chronic fatigue syndrome. I had the beginnings of Kaposi sarcoma on my thigh, in my throat. And like I said, I was coughing to the point where they had put me on pure codeine to try to stop the cough. A physician of mine, and also that of my former business partner, had seen a program on CNN about something called whole body hyperthermia. That is a treatment where the body is heated up to above a temperature of 108 degrees, which would be 42 centigrade, at which it is known from medical literature that it can kill certain types of cancer cells, certain types of viruses, and also possibly even the HIV virus. It also enhances and boosts the immune system. It is not a new therapy. It has been used throughout the centuries, actually written up about for the last 4,500 years. In 1990, this was done on two patients in Atlanta, and after the media attention that had occurred on that, it was shut down here in the United States. Doctors did not believe, based upon two case studies, the NIH was invited down to look at the medical evidence of two patients, one of whom is still alive today, 4 years out, totally symptom-free. When my doctor heard about this, he told me I would look into this. I located the doctor down in Atlanta, went through a battery of tests, and it was off to Italy that I and my business partner went. In Italy, on March 2nd, 1991, I went through whole-body extracorporeal hyperthermia. What they do, basically, it's like dialysis. The blood is removed from my body in a dialysis fashion, heated up above 48 degrees centigrade, which is about 116 to 120 degrees, and put back into the body hot, thereby raising my core body temperature up above 108 degrees. In my case, I was raised above the 108 degrees for over 1 hour, in which medical documentation has shown that viruses die. For 15 minutes, I was spiked to the hottest temperature so far on record, 112 degrees. Now, I'm under general anesthesia, and when I woke up the next day, the first thing that was gone was the cough, a cough that I could not get rid of. Within a couple of hours of the doctor coming in and checking me over and checking that of my business partner over, we were off and walking around Rome. And then spent the next 10 days recuperating just with some flu-like symptoms. Came back here to the United States. Prior to leaving, we had extensive blood work done. I had tested PCR positive, which tests for the DNA of HIV, antibody positive, P24 antigen positive, culture positive, and had a CD4 count of about 200. Today, I can tell you, it is 33 months later. I no longer have any of the Kaposi sarcoma that I had on my thigh, down my throat, the herpes that I had in the lung that caused the cough, made me cough up blood, gone. My CMV, Epstein-Barr, gone. And what astounded the researchers over at the University of Rome and here in the United States was the fact that I went from P24 antigen positive to P24 antigen negative. And I am also now PCR negative, and I am also culture negative, which means that they cannot grow the virus in my blood any longer. Also, my immune system has come back up to normal. I now have a CD4 count of about 8 to 900, but a CD8 count of about 2800, which they can't explain, and the Pasteur Institute wants to do a little work on. Result of this is that I'm healthy again. I've got a life. And unfortunately, the sad part is that this procedure is not allowed in the United States. There is a United States Senator, Frank Lautenberg, who I had the opportunity of working with years and years ago when I worked in government in Essex County, New Jersey. I met him at a town meeting. He heard my story and said, I want to look into this. We had a meeting in Washington with the NIH. The NIH people said, he didn't have AIDS. couldn't have had it. They were willing to listen. They had my medical records 18 months earlier, and still they refused to look into it. And now there is a little bit, just a little bit, of interest in this, to the point where Senator Lautenberg, on November the 18th, during the NAFTA debates in the United States Senate, came out and said, we need to look at this and other AIDS therapies. Hyperthermia is an example. It's helped Chuck. There are 44 other people like myself that are walking around in varying stages of health. Why, we don't know. But there are several companies that have tried to get money and tried to get money from the federal government to do research on this. They can't get it. Like I said, my own medical records over 18 months ago were given to the NIH directly, and they refuse to accept the information that they have. End result is that today I get phone calls from all over the United States and the world. And friends of mine who believed in this, who came forward, decided that we formed a nonprofit called HEAT, Hyperthermia Education and Information Incorporated. And the reason for that is to get the word out, because therapy like this is a natural thing. When you have the flu, you get a fever. And if people would just understand, allow that fever to go, it's going to burn off whatever is bad in the body. And it also is known to stimulate and enhance the immune system. But nobody wants to hear about that. So that's my story basically in a nutshell. Thank you.
I might mention that the 44 people that Chuck was referring to were all end-stage AIDS infected. It was out of 50, how many that went in the study?
56
went into the study. 44 are alive and well today after one single treatment. And I think that certainly warrants something, because otherwise they would have all been dead. That has received no coverage whatsoever.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Lynn Browning, and I'm alive and well. I feel great, and I am very, very happy that you are here to witness this event this morning. I have been positive for at least 10 years. I was diagnosed with full-blown AIDS 4 years ago. I might also point out that not only do I have AIDS, but I also have a liver disease, which is a little souvenir from Vietnam. So I'm fighting both battles, and I'm doing great. 4 years ago, I was basically forced to retire from government because of my symptoms, my illness, and I just wasn't able to function. Unfortunately, at that time, I was taking 22 pills a day. 22 pills a day. And basically what that did, the side effects from all the medication just literally turned me into a vegetable. I just could not function. I just couldn't do it. So in May of 90, I woke up one morning, and I just turned into a zombie. I had no concept of time, of space, or anything around me. So at that point, I decided that I really had to get control of my life if I was going to survive this. And basically, that's what I did. At that point, and I'd like to point out that this is just my personal experience, and I do not recommend that anybody do what I've done in the past, because I did some very radical things. At that point, I literally rolled out of my bed, crawled on my hands and knees to the bathroom, and flushed at least $2,000 worth of medication down the toilet. And I have never touched a pill since that day. I do not take any medication. I've made a lot of changes in my lifestyle. I'm a very positive thinker. I changed my nutritional regime immensely. I do what I call a living foods program. I do not eat cooked food. I have not eaten cooked food in 3 years. I use my stove for storage. I store my shoes in the oven. And what else is it for, right? But I'm doing great. I do a lot of sprouts. I do wheatgrass juice, which I'm sure a lot of you have heard about. I have tried everything imaginable to man. Some have worked, some haven't. The things that I felt comfortable with, I continued to do. The things I didn't feel comfortable with, I stopped. It's just as simple as that. You have got to try everything available. You've got to get away from the doctors. You've got to get away from everybody, literally. You've got to get away from these guys. They're killing you. The medications and fear is what's killing everybody. I have seen doctors and scientists all over the world. 4 years ago, the doctors gave me 3 months to live. 3 months to live. It's 4 years ago. 4 years ago, my T4 was 1,500, and I was bedridden. I was sick as a dog. Today, as of 3 weeks ago, my T4 is 38, and I feel great. I think we're looking in the wrong areas. We have been for the past 12 years.
I could bring you 200 to 300 individuals who are very healthy, who were using vitamin C drips, one of the primary programs offered by both Dr. Feldman and Dr. Calliope. In fact, Dr. Calliope is one of the pioneers in the field of vitamin C drips for AIDS. I could bring you individuals who used ozone treatment, both rectal insufflation and IV. I chose not to. Instead, I wanted to bring you people who each have a completely different approach to show you that it's not a single program that works, something that they all have in common. Every one of these programs honor the immune system. They avoid toxins, both physical and emotional, and they support themselves with constant positive nutrition and lifestyle and behavior and spiritual affirmation, which I think is also important in this effort.
I'm Patrick Donnelly. I'm a person living with HIV, and I'm the program coordinator at the Whole Foods Project of the Manhattan Center for Living here in New York City. Since 1989, the Whole Foods Project has been providing organic vegetarian meals for people with HIV and other life-challenging illnesses, as well as holistic nutritional education, with the belief that this food and this information may help to save lives. I'm here to speak both about my personal experience using organic whole foods as a treatment modality and about the perspective of the Whole Foods Project. I learned that I am HIV positive 4 years ago. After a period of grief and confusion, I started to reach out to try to educate myself about the treatments that were available. I began to read everything I could get my hands on, which is something that I still do today. Gradually, I started to rely on my own deepest instincts about the treatments I was reading about, because I was getting a lot of conflicting information. And I began to try to assemble for myself a conceptual model of how the body works and how it heals. The model that emerged, the one that works for me, is one in which I support my body and my immune system to do the work that they know how to do. I do this by giving them what they need and by avoiding toxins and stressors that lessen their ability to do their work. What I have learned and what I continue to learn in new ways every day is that my body needs physical, emotional, and spiritual support in order to flourish. I'm going to focus the rest of my remarks on the food choices that I make to support my body physically every day. My resolve is to choose the most health-supportive food that is available to me on any given day. So my goal in my research was to find out what foods support the immune system and what foods do not. What my reading revealed to me is that many of the diseases that we accept in Western society as inevitable consequences of aging are in fact directly related to our diet. I discovered that the standard American diet, which is high in animal products, fat, highly processed foods, low in fiber, full of toxic additives, preservatives, pesticides, antibiotics, and growth hormones, is not apparently what the body wants. What does the body want? What does my body want? The following are the characteristics of the foods that my research and my own personal experience have shown me are the most supportive of immune system functioning. Wholeness. I try to choose food that is unprocessed or minimally processed, what I call whole. The food in the standard American diet has been manipulated to an almost unbelievable extent, mostly for the economic reasons benefiting the people that sell it. Whole foods retain both the nutrients and the vital energy that the body needs to flourish. The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine recommends a mostly plant-based diet of a variety of whole grains, legumes, vegetables, and fruits, prepared in ways that retain and enhance their nutritional quality. These foods are full of the antioxidants that Dr. Calipay discussed earlier today. Organic. I choose foods that have been grown by sustainable agricultural methods whenever possible, because my body is already dealing with the stress of having HIV. It seems self-evident to me that it doesn't need the added stress of having to work to detoxify itself of additives, preservatives, pesticides, antibiotics, and steroids. Low in fat. Dr. Neil Barnard of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine has told me that research shows that fat in the bloodstream impairs white cell function very quickly and dramatically. A German study going on since 1978 shows that vegetarians have twice the natural killer cell activity of meat eaters. A low-fat diet is, of course, an advantage that I want to give myself in helping my body to deal with HIV. Free of refined sugars and low in natural sugars is another characteristic of the food that I choose. A study done at Loma Linda University found that eating over 100 grams of sugary food significantly decreases phagocyte activity for up to 5 hours and longer. This means that if I eat something sugary for every meal, I've essentially knocked out that component of my immune system for the entire day. Obviously not something that I want to do. None of the information that I've just shared with you is a secret. It's available to anybody who wants to review the literature and speak to the people investigating these issues that, as I've done. But for some reason, this is not the diet that is being served in hospitals, being recommended by doctors, dietitians, nutritionists, supported by insurance companies, or written up in government pamphlets, with a very few exceptions. In fact, what is usually being served and recommended to people with HIV is exactly the food that is making the rest of America very sick. Only they're urging us to eat more of it. My question is, how can the food that isn't good for anyone else be good for people with HIV? And I have to tell you that in my experience of working with sick people, no one has come to me and said, I have diarrhea, I can't absorb anything that I'm eating. Suddenly I change to a high-fat, high-protein diet full of white flour and sugar, and all of a sudden everything cleared up. People don't tell me this. On the other hand, people do come to me and they say, I switched to a whole foods vegetarian diet. I had the first bowel movement I've had, normal bowel movement that I've had in months. When I stopped eating sugar, my thrush cleared up. I feel so much more energy when I eat this food. I hear this all the time. Most of the money being spent in the fight against HIV illness today goes for the development of toxic drug therapies. A major HIV service organization in New York City spends part of their multi-million dollar budget to give people this nutritional advice, and I quote, eat whatever you want, enjoy your favorite foods whenever you want and more often. Pizza for breakfast, pancakes and syrup for breakfast, go for it. I want to congratulate the members of the press that are here today for being willing to consider a different perspective. And I hope that this is the beginning of a long process of self-education for each of you, as I have had to do. Sharing the information being presented here today through your work could go a long way towards decreasing the suffering that this disease has caused.
For the journalists in the audience, check these facts. In one recent year, 50,000 Americans died of malnutrition in the hospital from malnutrition developed in the hospital. Now, I've got to ask you, if you went to a driving school where the school had caused 50,000 students to die while learning how to drive, wouldn't someone suggest maybe someone's not doing it right? And that's why people going into the hospital with AIDS rarely get out alive. And now you take a person who is completely healthy but may have been exposed at some point to the virus, and you put them on a very toxic drug, a drug that was so toxic it was banned. It wasn't taken forward in chemotherapy, and that's what you give a healthy person. How long do you think it would take to manifest the symptoms of what we're calling AIDS by giving a person an immunosuppressive drug who has nothing immunosuppressive in their body? Take any healthy person off the street and start giving them chemotherapy at high dosage, and 2 months later, check their immune system and see now what they have. I don't know why people can't figure that out. I don't know why the doctors and the scientists can't figure that out. Take 100 people, Senator Patterson suggested. Give half of them your treatment. Cross-match them. Age and type of symptoms. T-cell counts. Opportunistic infections. And give another group this protocol. At the end of 6 months, retest them. Let's see who's alive and well and what they have in their body. It's that simple, right? Seems simple. Now watch how many of the vested interests and egos get involved to see that this doesn't happen. We met with the AIDS czar of New York City, Mr. Johnson, who is also HIV positive. He saw the protocol that I showed you, and I took down 1,800 scientific studies showing that there is merit to this protocol. He wanted it. Mayor Dinkins did not. Mayor Dinkins opposes this. All right? Why, I don't know. I can't get the man off the tennis court to ask him a question. Maybe now he's not in office. After this, maybe he might be a little more accessible, but then it's too late. He's out of the administration. But the administration at the top did not allow this to go forward, and they were made aware of it. Maybe Giuliani will be better. Maybe it can happen at a local level or a state level, maybe at a federal level. It's not going to happen at the federal level until we have first a congressional investigation of the war on AIDS. Bring under oath Fauci, under oath, that if he lies, he's going to be held accountable legally. Bring Gallo. I'd love to see Gallo ask questions that no one's ever asked him under oath, where if he lies, he could go to jail. Bring every one of those lab assistants. Bring people from the National Cancer Institute. Bring the people from the people who are running the war on AIDS. Bring Burroughs Welcome in under oath. And then let's just see what we are dealing with when with a war on AIDS. And I can tell you under oath with the documentation that we all have on the trials of AZT, that John Lawrenson has the medical documentation, the scientific documentation of how false that was, the sloppiness of the studies that should never have been done. Now, when someone has to testify under oath and when Freedom of Information documents are in hand, let's see if they say the same things that they can easily say through a press release to the media. That they can't do otherwise. Then you say, if this is what we've been dealing with, and the same people who have completely boggled our war on cancer are the same identical institutions, individuals who are absolutely muddying our war on AIDS, then shouldn't we have a whole new team in there and a new approach? Then the legislators will insist, won't ask, they will insist. Senator Hatch, Senator Richardson, and over 170 legislators in Congress will insist that proper objective clinical trials, trials that these people are sitting on the review board of, not their people that they would put in there. Do you think for a second I would trust anything that Fauci ever said about AIDS? This is a man who publicly last week on CNN said there is no evidence, I'm quoting him, I quote, there is no evidence that megavitamins help the immune system. Dr. Fauci, you should resign. If that's all the more competent you are in understanding the role of vitamins, then either you're not doing your homework or that kind of ignorance can lead to people's death, and that is the height of irresponsibility. We keep hearing what we don't know about AIDS. I'm suggesting we know a great deal about AIDS. These people have to know something or they would be dead. They don't know anything. Fauci clearly doesn't know anything. Gallo doesn't know anything except how to mastermind how to get a patent that he possibly didn't earn. And he controls a blood chemistry study. But there are those people alive and well whose patients are not dying. Now, I suggest you talk with Dr. Christopher Calliope. I spent 2 years every single day, 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, talking with patients in his office, dozens and dozens of patients, and following them to see, did they get better, did they get worse? What were being given, what was not being given? And then poring at night, every night, over the scientific literature and interviewing other physicians. There are at least 1,000 physicians and scientists in America who do have some answers. The trouble is, when was the last time you saw any of them invited to any conference? Zero. Never. When was the last time you heard Hillary Clinton talking with them? Never. Or Bill Clinton, not a chance. Or Gallo, not a word. Why is it that these people have been excluded, the people who are coming up with the answers? Is it because they're uncredentialed? Well, you could have fooled me. I thought being a professor at Mount Sinai with 80 published scientific peer-reviewed journals, a leading presenter at scientific conferences, would allow you some input. No one has asked Marty Feldman, one of the finest scientists in America and one of the finest clinicians. No one has asked Professor and Dr. Calliope. No one has asked John Lawrenson. No one has asked any of these people to come forward with the information they have. And yet their patients, we're not saying cure, but we're saying the propensity of their therapy has helped people, not just with AIDS, but with other immunodeficient conditions as well, with heart disease, with cancer. And if they're having that kind of success, shouldn't someone, and it has to be someone within either the media or a top legislator, insist that there be more voices heard and not the continued little tiny pack that they keep bringing forward? Haven't we had enough benefits? Haven't we had enough magic quilts? Haven't we had enough dances, AIDS dances? At what point are we going to start looking and saying, what have any of these done? Instead, take a look at what these people are doing.
This is a reality that you're now aware of. I hope you share it. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening and watching. Have a nice day.
Hey, what's up, man? Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop right on.